Before we begin, just to remind everyone, this is the second to last shir. Next Thursday is the final one for this year. We'll start again in the beginning of February. I don't know the exact date, but we'll put it around. But also, I do want to mention, I don't have the dates in front of me, but I do want to mention that on Hanukkah, we're doing during the week of Hanukkah, we're doing two shiurim, two discussion groups. One on the Monday morning of Hanukkah, I don't remember the exact date now, which will be in Ariella's Breedy's home, and one on the Wednesday evening, which will be, I don't know if you know this, will be in Adam's, you didn't, okay. We'll be in the Zion's home in Randwick. So all the details will be sent out, and such one. And the one on the Monday night will be for men and women, so please come along. Okay, so just a little bit of review. We're working through the book that has the little quotes on different topics. Last week we did the topic of forgiveness. We discussed how forgiveness is and humility are connected. That's why the chapter of forgiveness comes right after the one of humility. We talked about forgiveness being good for the one who's asking for forgiveness. That concept of Yom Kippur only atoning for sins we do to other people if we first apologize and ask for forgiveness. But also, it's very good for the one who forgives, hence the prayer of forgiveness, which we talked about last week, that we say every night. We also explained that forgiveness is not condoning the behavior, it's more about letting go. And there are three different ways to put this, but there are three layers of forgiveness. The first basic one is just not wishing bad on the other person. The second one, which is the main one really, is about letting go of resentment. The third is restoring the relationship. So level one is the basic decency of every person, never to wish bad on someone else, even if they did something bad to you. The second is the one we should always aspire to. The third is not always possible. Not always possible because not everyone is up to that. And sometimes it's not even the right thing to do. Sometimes the relationship is toxic and maybe it's not the right thing to restore the relationship, but at least we can let go of hate. Because walking around with hate and resentment is a very, very bad thing, as we discussed at length last week. And then we talked about other strategies like validating, understanding your own pain, not to ignore it, not to pretend that you're not hurt, that you are hurt, but you choose to let go. You can only let go of something if you know you have it. We talked about sometimes channeling and growing from the pain. In other words, reflecting on how hurtful it was, what someone else said, and maybe learning from that how not to do that to other people. Sometimes the way to do it is actually to give kindness back to the other person. That brings kindness, brings the emotion. Faith is really important, and taking responsibility sometimes, even if we were right, but maybe we didn't do it in the right way. Maybe, in other words, realizing that we have a part to play often in what happened. Okay, that was last week. So today we're going to talk about something called calmness, but the way the Hebrew word in the book, the chapter is called the Matun, because calmness in Hebrew, and you'll see why I'm focusing on the Hebrew word in a second. Calmness in Hebrew is Mitinut, right? Which is very interesting. It's a very interesting chapter in the book, this book that we're working through. It only has like two or three quotes in the chapter. It's a very short chapter, but very powerful. And we need to have a look, actually, at the Hebrew terminology to understand calmness. So basically, we're trying to focus on today's idea of living in a calm way, a non-stressful way, being calm, being measured, and so on. Now, as we said, the Hebrew word often used for that is mitinut, and that's sometimes how it's translated. But the particular chapter in that book is called Shar HaMatun. It's the gate of the Matun, which means the calm one. But you know how things work in Hebrew, as we've mentioned a number of times, that in Hebrew, often you have words that have multiple meanings. Even sometimes multiple meanings that don't seem connected to each other necessarily unless you examine it, right? Hebrew is an amazing language. I mean, after all, I'm talking about classical Hebrew in its origin. It's a godly language. It's a divine language. And often that comes through by understanding how words which have multiple translations, often you need to explore and analyze what the connection between the translations are and how they work, right? Because when we look at the concept of calmness, we have to understand calmness is just an expression of something. So we need to know when a person is calm, or they seem to be a calm person or live calmly, what is actually going on? What is bringing that calmness? I have to interject and say this is a very important one for me because this is an area that I definitely struggle in. Naturally, not a very calm person, in case you didn't know. I smiled when I was preparing this today because this is the one thing, one area that my mother always used to tell me often when she was here particularly. She would say, do you like practice what you preach? Because sometimes she'd see me get a little stressed at home and she never liked the fact that I was always rushing because I do tend to do that sometimes. I have to say, it's getting a little better. I'm trying to work on it. Like, you know, just some people just not by nature tense up. I mean, I just had a stupid little story this morning, right? So I need an appointment with my doctor, and it's actually not a very serious thing at all. It's just because I actually need to fill out a form or something. So this doctor is very hard to get hold of, so I called at 8 o'clock in the morning. There's a cancellation, and I can't get through. It's busy because everyone's trying to call at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I feel myself tensing up, and I had these papers on the desk as I'm busy preparing, just going over, looking over my notes. I thought to myself, you know, come on, you're ridiculous. Like, you're preparing this stuff. Just calm down. That's all for a reason. You got to be in the moment. All stuff we're going to talk about and revisit again. Anyway, so it's getting a little bit better. I did get the appointment, by the way. So that was good. Okay, so back to the word mitzinut. So the word mitzinut, matun, comes from the word in Hebrew. In fact, they even use it today, is lahamtin. Anyone knows what lahamtin means? To wait. To wait. To pause. Right? Even in general use of the word wait. So if you, well, in modern Hebrew they use the word tachakeh sometimes, but you could say, if I want to ask you to wait for me at the corner, I could use the word tamtin or lahamtin. Right? And that's related, as we'll see, directly related to the concept of calmness. Why? So some of the commentaries explain the following, right? Because often calmness is an expression of someone that's prepared to wait. Wait in what? Wait where? It's about waiting and not reacting. Okay? That's really what it is. How you do it is a separate story. We'll get to that. But, so for example, if someone did something to you or said something to you, often the instincts, we tense up and we respond. We might respond badly. We might respond negatively. What's actually happening there, for the most part, is that we're not waiting. There's no pause. We're reacting instinctively, impulsively, right? One of the commentaries on the book that we're working through says an amazing thing. He says, he brings another translation of the word matun from the Talmud. Here's another fascinating it's not a language lesson, but it's an interesting thing. Very often, Hebrew words and Aramaic words are very connected. So you know there's a language called Aramaic, which is the Talmud is written in Aramaic, right? Because that was the language they spoke at the time. By the way, it's a language that is still spoken. Did you know that? The Armenians speak it. I once sat on a plane next to a woman. We were going to Melbourne. And I know we got talking, and she's from somewhere around that top of the world. It was in Australia. And she said, oh, you Jewish, do you guys study Talmud? That's like Aramaic. I said, yeah, what's your connection to Aramaic? She said, I speak Aramaic. Now, it's a different Aramaic, obviously. But I did ask a couple of words, like, because I know quite a bit of Aramaic because of the Talmud. And I asked her, but and it was amazing. Like, you know, I asked her what the word for gold, it just came to my head. Like, the word for gold in Aramaic is dahava. Like in Hebrew, it's zahav. In Aramaic, it's dahav. So it's very, very similar, the Aramaic and Hebrew language. But the Talmud Aramaic is different. It's more of like you know, we have Yiddish and German. So the Talmud Aramaic is very much a Yiddish form of Aramaic. So it's very similar, but not quite the same. But the reason I'm saying that is because often Aramaic words are used to interpret Hebrew words. And they have a connection, and sometimes the connection is very important and significant. So in Aramaic, the word matun actually refers to something that's liquid. A liquid that will gel if you leave it. Otherwise, it'll become a solid. Right? So he says an amazing concept. He says, this is what mitinu, this is what calmness is about, right? When you have something, you always need to remember it's not the finished product. You need to wait for it to gel, like a liquid. In every experience that we have, we need to pause. That's where calmness comes in. In other words, you need to view, especially if someone says something to you or someone does something to you, or you need to respond to something or react to something, just remember, the liquid hasn't gelled yet. It hasn't set. Right? You know, you make jello, it's liquid, it's got to set. So it hasn't set yet. So wait. Wait till the finished product. Wait till you understand everything. So that's true with regard to, if we do that, we process things, often we begin to see things from different angles. We begin to see things from different ways, different perspectives. And we don't instinctively, impulsively respond. We don't take revenge, or whatever the case is, because we approach it from a much calmer way. But the calming comes from the ability to say, to wait. Say, it's not ready yet. It hasn't set. Let me just process this first. Which as human beings, many of us don't do this, right? Not only with regard to response to other people, but as it could be in many things. Rushed decisions, right? If you have a dilemma, you have a question mark of what to do, what job to take, what else to, right? So every good decision is not rash. Every good decision is thought about, done calmly. A calmly made decision is, for the most part, always a good decision or much better decision. Because you've thought about it, you've viewed it, you've understood it from different ways, right? Now, that doesn't mean a person should over-obsess. I mean, there are some people that suffer from the opposite problem, obviously. They can never ever make a decision. And that's an issue because we need to make decisions that are... We need to go with it, you know, we need to decide things in life and go with it and have a bit of faith that things will work out. And if they don't work out, they weren't meant to, right? So we can't over-obsess. So being an indecisive person is a very terrible thing. But, however, so we need to be decisive people, but decisive in the way where we wait. And it could be not only in a way of conflict, it could be in any form of response. So generally, communication, right? When we communicate with other people, we've spoken about this many, many times, where the art of communication and the human communication and the power of communication is not about broadcasting me, it's about talking and connecting to the other person. For that, I need to think that through. I need to know if what I'm going to say is going to be received. If what I'm going to say is going to be something that's beneficial and effective and kind and productive and constructive, right? We often don't do that. Very often we don't. Well, it comes from listening, first of all. It comes from waiting. It comes from the thought process, right? So it's measured speaking, but it all comes from this art of let's not rush, right? And then there's the general life experience where we don't rush from one thing to another, but we take things calmly, which we'll talk about in more detail in a moment. Am I making sense? Is it good? Okay. So let's see the quote over here that he starts off the chapter with. Oh, sorry. Here we are. To wait, reflection before making a decision, pause before responding. Here we are. Forget about the... So he says, Amar HaChacham, remember he always talks about the wise man. Hamten b'tinatzel, he says, wait and you'll be saved. You'll be saved from an action or something you say that will be harmful to you. Right? Maher, if you rush, you'll regret it. And that's just the rule of life. When you rush into something, if you respond badly to someone and then you can't take it back, normally it doesn't lead to good things, right? For a moment, as we've talked about many times, momentarily you might have got it off our chest, but it comes back to bite us. If we wait and we process and we think about something constructive to do, we often get saved. Then he says, the Amar and the wise man said, Hamten acharitatova, waiting ends with good. Rushing acharitara ends with bad. It's very simple and very powerful. And he says, waiting calmly may produce. He says, tova. He translated it as prosperity, haste from misfortune, right? So that's the essence, and that's why in Hebrew it's called this matun. So matun means to wait, it means calmness, and it also means that liquid that hasn't set. They're all connected because we have to follow something through in a measured, calm, and calculated way, in a positive way. Now, how do we do that? In other words, where does this calmness to wait come from, right? How do we eliminate that stress? I mean, there's so many ways. Stress, obviously, a big topic, separate topic. But how do we engage in a much more calmer lifestyle? Because we know to be calm is actually healthier, right? It's just actually physically healthy also, besides being more constructive. So it comes from many things, but one of the things it comes from, I think is a really important thing just to highlight, it comes from presence, being present, right? Being present, being fully in the moment, fully in the experience. My sister and I were talking, and my wife and I were talking about this last week. And I told you a bunch of stories of my mother 2 weeks ago. So she was always very, very present. She could never rush any activity. She wasn't a procrastinator at all, actually. But she was, when she did something, it was very, very mindful. Without learning about mindfulness. She didn't actually even know the word. But she was extremely, extremely mindful. It doesn't matter what she was doing. She was talking to someone, fully there. She was making gefilte fish, fully there. It was very good gefilte fish, mind you. But she was fully there. Right? And that's really important. Why? Why is it so important? Because you see, when you're present, first of all, you don't rush. You're calm. But you're not rushing for the next thing, right? A great problem, and today I think it's more than ever, is that people are so busy and so occupied and they have so many things to do, which is legitimate, but we don't do any of them properly because we're never present in anything that we do. Because whenever we're doing something, we're always stressed and worrying and thinking about the thing that we need to do in 10 minutes from now. Right? Now, the thing that we have to do in 10 minutes from now might be really important, but what you're doing now is the only thing, or should be the only thing, right? That's number one. Obviously being mindful, living mindfully is connected, intrinsically connected with a deep sort of dose of calmness, right? But it's more than that. You see, when you're present in something, right, that prevents us from being impulsive. Why? And this is a very, very important idea. When we're present in something, presence means noticing. It means looking at something from all angles. Right. In other words, this could be with anything. So someone says something to us. We're in an experience. Something happens. I can't get through to the doctor. Whatever the case is. Being present gives us the ability to look at it deeper. And to notice things that we didn't notice before. Right? That's part of the greatness, the power of mindful living. It's about, now, when we mix in the Jewish perspective of this, we've said this many, many times, it's not just being present in an experience, it's also having the understanding that wherever we are is where we're meant to be, by Hashgacha Pratit, by Divine Providence, number one. And number two, wherever we are is the purpose. In other words, for now, my purpose in life is this moment, is where I am, is what's happening to me now, and my job, my mission, is to give it the best purpose and meaning that I can. Right? Whatever that is. It might just be to stay calm and to be nice and to be kind or whatever the case is. But I do that by stopping, being fully present, and looking at different angles. Because presence brings understanding. It brings a deeper understanding. It brings calmness and it brings different perspectives of the same picture on the same. You know, it's the same thing with anything, right? If you stand in front of a picture and look at it long enough, there's research studies that have been done about this. You'll start to notice things you never noticed in the first 5 minutes, right? If you start looking at something, let's say you're bored, you're stuck in a room, there's nothing to go, there's a picture there, right? You'll start noticing things you never noticed before. If you're in any experience, you'll notice things and perhaps different things that didn't show up in the beginning. So the same thing with an emotional experience. If someone says something to me, what shows up right away is that it was hurtful. If I'm present and calm and wait, I might notice other things and I can process. I can understand it better. Maybe there's a different angle to it. Maybe there's a way of looking at it. Right? And so on. So it gives us the ability to notice things without being distracted, which then brings a lot more kindness. Right? We'll see it later in a biblical story, yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's true. So, first of all, two things with that. So, number one, I think what I said before about making decisions is true with this also. Everything needs a balance. When we talk about presence, it doesn't mean getting stuck. The difference between presence and being stuck, right? because life has to move on, obviously. Like, presents come in, if I have a conversation with you, then everything gets on hold for half an hour because I really have to understand the conversation. That's unhealthy, right? But it does mean a certain sense of, hold on, maybe it's not exactly what I thought. So you said something to me, I got upset. So I stopped. Maybe, hold on a second, maybe, even if I can't see it now, but maybe there is a different way of looking at it. So let me just pause and I'll come back to it later, whatever the case is. Yeah. So I think that's a very important, I'm happy you brought it up because nothing in extreme is ever healthy, as we know, right? But being present is very, very important. But being present can, sometimes a person can be stuck in the name of being present. Then they become a procrastinator, which is a pathology. Like that's right. Okay. Which actually leads to the next thing I was saying, because we once did this, but I want to just remind you again. There is another amazing, I mean, mitinut, this idea of being calm is a tremendous value. It's in Jewish literature, it's considered a very, very important thing. But there's also something else considered very, very important, and that is the concept of zrizut. Right? Zrizut means alacrity, being quick, not procrastinating. Now we know in Jewish literature that's a very big thing. You have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, don't put it off. You have the opportunity to do a favor to someone, don't put it off. Don't delay things, don't procrastinate, don't waste time, all these things, right? And sometimes people, I'm smiling, I say sometimes people, I mean myself. Sometimes people confuse the two, right? In the name of zrizut, in the name of being quick, they rush. But actually, zrizut is not rushing. It's not rushing at all. And there's a huge difference. Let me just walk you through it, because it's an important idea. Right? Zrizut never means to rush anything. It does mean not to waste, not to lose an opportunity, not to procrastinate, and to move on to something without delay. That's what it means. Now, they're very different. Why? In other words, like this, because while I'm doing something, this is what I'm supposed to be doing now, right? Whatever experience is, I'm talking to someone, I'm in a meeting, I'm driving, I'm walking, whatever the case is, whatever we do, we're supposed to do calmly, not rushed. Rush is not a good thing. I mean, sometimes we rush because we're late, but, all right, so... And being a zariz, being someone who has alacrity, doesn't mean you rush something and get overdone so you can do 20 more things. Because then you end up doing everything not good, right? So whatever we do properly. But it does mean that when we're finished, we move on to the next thing. When that moment, with that experience, with a proper focus, with a proper mindfulness, comes to an end, then we have to start the new activity, and we have to start the new thing without procrastinating. That's where Zuzut comes in, because sometimes we need to start something else, but we're not so much in the mood of that something else. So we start putting it off, we start finding reasons we don't have to do it, right? That's where procrastination comes in. So Zuzut doesn't mean to rush. In fact, later on in this book, which we're not going to get to, but he has a chapter on Zuzut. And the way he explains Zuzut is more about attentiveness. It's about being attentive to what needs to get done and getting it done. Getting it done doesn't mean rushing it. Getting it done means jump into it. With full presence, with full mindfulness. Right? So in other words, zrizut means whenever I have an opportunity, I don't put it off, I dive into it. Dive into it means dive into it calmly with full presence. Right? I think I've shared this to you before, but where I saw this played out in the most extreme way is the years I spent learning with in the shul and in the community of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe, I only came to appreciate this later. He never wasted a moment, like to an extreme. And yet was never rushed, never ever. So his rizut was incredible, but his mitinut also was incredible, right? He would talk to someone, sometimes, you know, there was the famous dollars he would give to charity. When he would talk to someone, it was with full focus, as if nothing else existed. But as soon as that came to an end, on to the next person right away. It was never like, right, never waiting, never like, let's take a break. Or, I mean, sometimes people need a break, but I'm saying, it was never like a procrastination between. So there was never a moment wasted, but whatever he was doing was like fully there. And you saw whatever he was doing, like when he would talk slowly, explain things in detail. Yeah. So it's interesting he asked the question, because he once said that by nature he's a rusher, he's a person that rushes. He doesn't have so much, that's what he said. Because the reason why I said it was a context, because someone once mentioned about the days of the week, and he mentioned that he was born on a Friday. And the Talmud says somewhere that when you're born on a Friday, you rush. Why? Because people rush before Shabbos. There's always like a bit of rushing. So there's like a thing, right? No, I think, well, it might be a personal, I don't know, but I'm saying, no, I think it had to do with, I mean, the extreme thing of not wasting time, but at the same time being fully present, I think had to do with his learning and the way he served God, right? Like, why, I'll tell you an interesting little story, actually, where I saw it as a much younger. I saw this play out such an amazing way. Where each experience, he was fully there, but then it didn't blow into the other experience. So, like, that's also part of it, right? You're there, but then you move on to the next thing, and you're fully focused there as well. So, I remember this when I first came there. It was an interesting story, actually. I'll give you a bit of context so you understand it. So, when the Rebbe were coming to Daven, right, into the shul, he was always very serious, because Davening is a serious thing, right? So he'd always come in, it was very focused, very, you could see his demeanor, always very focused there. But on the way to Davening, there was a practice that he used to do often, like if it was a minchah, he would come into shul. On the way, there was like a row of kids. Kids would queue up, and he was very into people giving tzedakah, right? There's a concept of giving charity before you Daven. So he would have a bag of coins, and would give each child a coin to put in the pushka. And he loved talking to children, dealing with children, and so on. So, and then there was a big pushka outside the door of the shul, and he would always point to give a coin and point to the pushka, the child could put at tzedakah box. So one time when I first came to study there, it was actually I came with my older brother's wedding, and my younger sister was very young at the time. She must have been about, I don't know, 10 or something. And I was in the shul waiting for the Rebbe to come into Davar Mincha, and I could see through the door was open, and the Rebbe was coming. And he was giving out coins, and my sister, I was looking because my sister was in the line also. And for some reason, my sister had a t-shirt that, I don't know, they were doing in South Africa, they'd made these t-shirts, and it said, do a mitzvah today. So, and she stood there in front of the Rebbe with this t-shirt, she was a little kid. She still has the t-shirt because it's specialist, but she doesn't wear it, obviously, but a little outgrown. So she had a t-shirt, and the Rebbe came with his coin. When he got to her, she was like the last one, just before the Rebbe was coming out. The Rebbe gave her this coin, and they looked at her with a huge smile, said, do a mitzvah today, and said to the boy, because he read the t-shirt, like it was like he noticed, in other words, right? And again, this broad smile, he was smiling, the Rebbe's smile was very broad, it was very, very light, bright. I gave her this coin, and that was it. And then she went to the pushka, and then the Rebbe turned around, kissed him, and walked into the shul, and in a flash, his complete demeanor changed. Like the smile was not fake, the smile was absolute, it was like a beautiful moment. And he finished the experience, he was like, that smile was as if like nothing else exists, he's just busy with this little young child who has a t-shirt that says, do a mitzvah a day. And then in a second, his face completely changed, walked to davening as if he always did, like he was completely in a different experience. But they were completely separate. And in each one, he was completely there. I mean, it's hard for most people to do that, but maybe I'm going to bring it out clearly, but it was actually quite, it made a tremendous impression on me because I could see both demeanors were completely there. It wasn't like sometimes you smile at someone because you're not interested in them and then you were, right? It wasn't that kind of smile. It was like it's fully there. And then all of a sudden, completely different. Because now we're in a new experience, right? That's rizut. Rizut means that I don't blow the experiences. I don't get stuck in one and then do other than one half-heartedly. In everything I do, I get to it and I do it. But when I'm doing it, I'm calm and I'm properly there. And that's the confusion that some of us make. We need to learn that difference, right? Not wasting time and rushing are two different things. Rushing is not effective. Now, obviously, so some of the questions today are good introductions to the next part. So you asked about learning and faith. So I think a lot of it is about that, right? By the way, there's another reason why I suffer from this. Another part of not being present and not being calm is some people have a personality of FOMO. I suffer from big. Everyone knows what FOMO is?
Yeah.
Right? Fear of missing out. I'm a big FOMO person, right?
Are you?
Yeah, terrible. by nature. No? Very, very bad. And I express myself lots of different things. Like I'm a very, very punctual person. Some of it comes from FOMO because I'm worried if I come late, I might miss out on something. Right? I mean, I respect punctuality. I think punctuality is a good thing, but some of my over-punctuality comes from FOMO. Now, like, it's funny because part of that sometimes is the need to check my WhatsApp all the time, right? It's also FOMO because I really think that there must be something important there, right? So today, like I was preparing, and then every once in a while, I think to myself, but like, why am I checking my WhatsApp now? Anyway, it's a funny story because I actually didn't pass the test, and I did check it in the middle of praying the shiur, which was stupid. I could have waited another 20 minutes. But actually, it was good because Liat checked with me, WhatsApp me to know if there's a shiur today. So if I wouldn't have checked it, you wouldn't know. So, okay, it works out, but it's not a good practice. I'm happy I did check it. Right? No, so I'm saying because, like, but it's also because what you're in now has to be where you are. It doesn't matter what's happening, and the world will stay even if you don't check your WhatsApp, right? I mean, obviously, once in a while, I mean, there's a balance. You need to get back to people in the street, you have to be responsible about it, but it can come, it can wait, it has its time. Anyway, but going back to the concept of how we bring this about and using faith and using things, you go back to the story of Joseph, right? Now, we've mentioned the story many times, but I want to mention to you a detail of the story which is fascinating. Because we've mentioned this once, there's a fascinating research study. Because today people are not attentive, and a lot of it has to do with technology, as we know, right? So there's a research study that Dr. Pelkowitz quotes in one of his books, where they concluded, the result of the research study was that since iPhones and smartphones came into being, and people are on them the whole time, they're not paying attention, and there's lack of focus, lack of presence, there's less empathy. Less empathy. And which is an amazing thing. Part of that is because empathy requires noticing. Right? You see? Also, you need to notice. You need to notice their body language. You need to notice, be attention, be attuned to what's bothering them. If half the time you're checking the phone, it's like unbelievable, right? So we're not... And people just are losing connection. I mean, just this morning, yesterday, I noticed something interesting. Like, I mean, I've noticed many times, but just for some reason, it caught my attention more the last few mornings. I try to take a walk every morning, and like, I take different routes. Just the route I've been taking, there's a bus stop there. It's amazing how there's like a long line of people, and everyone's just like this. Like, it's like robots. And it's such a terrible thing, because, you know, it used to be that you stood in line with a bunch of strangers, you struck up a conversation, you made a connection with someone. Which, by the way, there's research that random conversations lead to longevity. Did you know that?
Yes.
So it's like an unbelievable thing. Anyway, but back to empathy. So lack of presence leads to lack of empathy. Being present, and being present means being calm, because you can't be present if you're not calm, leads to greater empathy. And there's an amazing story, and we'll see how this connects to faith and everything in the story of Joseph, right? Which Lubavitch Rebbe once pointed out in incredible detail. So, as we know, Joseph was sold when he was a young boy. He was the perfect material to be a victim, and he wasn't. And he had this incredible calmness about him, incredible serenity, incredible happiness, based on one fact. And his fact was that wherever you are, you're meant to be. Hashgacha Pratit. And wherever you are, you're meant to be because there's a purpose. So much so, I think as you mentioned last week in the context of forgiveness, that when his brothers revealed themselves, when he revealed himself to his brothers, they got scared. And he right away told them, no, you have nothing to be scared about. You made a wrong choice, but I'm not angry. I've let go of resentment because I believe that I was here on a mission, and my mission was in the years of famine, I'm going to be able to provide for other people. Okay. So because of that, because of his deep-rooted faith, and this is certainly one way to be calm, and I thought about this morning in my silly story with the phone call to the doctor. I was thinking to myself, so what? If I don't get it, if I don't get through, I won't get through. I'll find a different way to get the form filled out. And if I don't get the form filled out, it wasn't meant to be, right? That's the way we should think. I mean, I'm getting it onto. It's got to get folded eventually, but it wasn't meant to happen today. But that's what, I mean, it's easy to put into practice when you're talking about a silly form and a silly appointment, but not so when you're stuck in jail in Egypt with no family and no WhatsApp either, right? So, but he did. So that was, Joseph is the ultimate model of this. He truly believed that if he landed up there, he was meant to be there, right? So he was never angry. Eventually, things got worse, as we know. He was sold into slavery. He worked for a guy called Potiphar, who after a number of years, Potiphar's wife decided to try and seduce him. He ran away, and then she put a libel onto him, and then he landed up languishing in jail. Far away from his family, no family, nothing, no one to talk to. He, perfect victim. He could have wallowed in his victimhood if he wanted to. And he didn't. Right? He was calm, happy, believing God is taking care of him. And he'll be okay. He walks into the prison cell. He wakes up one morning and he walked into a part of the prison cell. And in the prison cell at the time was, this is a detail that's often unnoticed in the story. It's an amazing detail. He sees the, because what happened was that the butler and the baker, Pharaoh's butler and baker, had landed up in jail as well. The butler, because Pharaoh found a stone in his bread, the butler, because there was a fly in his wine, whatever the case is, bottom line is they both landed up in the cell. Joseph walks into the cell one day, and he sees that they're upset. He notices they're upset. And he says to them four words. Madua pneichem ra'im hayom. Why is your face sad today? Right? Four words. He noticed. Now, as the Rebbe points out, he noticed it because he wasn't locked in himself. He wasn't stressed. He wasn't every day waking up and say, I'm angry, I'm bitter, because why I'm here? Because then he wouldn't be there. He wouldn't be there with full presence and calmness. Because he was there with full presence and calmness, this is long before the research study, right? Before he was there with full presence and calmness, he noticed another person. He noticed that they weren't the same like yesterday. And basically, in modern language, he says, what's up? Is anything wrong? So they said, well, now that you ask, yes, there is. And they told him, we both had dreams last night. They're very confusing dreams. But then I interpret them. So he interpreted them, the whole story. What was the outcome of that story? The outcome of the story is that the butler was let out of jail eventually. He was freed. And when Pharaoh had a dream and couldn't find interpretation, he came before Pharaoh and said, you know, there's a guy I know that can interpret dreams. He's still in jail. On that day, Joseph comes out of the jail within a couple of hours. Joseph is promoted and becomes the viceroy of Egypt, the person who was able to sustain Egypt during the time of the famine, because he became an advisor to Pharaoh. He brought his family. He reconnected with his family. All because why? Because he noticed that someone else was sad. Why did he notice someone else was sad? Because of his deep faith and his deep emunah and his deep belief in God, that wherever he was meant to be, and he was perfectly calm. And when you're calm and when you're present, you notice. It goes together. When we're not present, we retreat into ourselves. We retreat into our own stress. And we retreat into our own stress. I mean, just you can tell with yourself. It's very hard. We snap at other people when we're stressed. Why? What is someone else? If I'm stressed, what did you do wrong? It's got nothing to do with what you did. It's got to do with what the state of being that I'm in. Because I'm stressed, so I'm in myself. I can't notice anything outside of myself. Right? Joseph could, and he said four words. He said, what's with your face? You don't look good today. Right? What's that day they call the mental health? They call them... Are you okay day? Right, yeah. Right? But that was the... That was the ultimate expression of that. He just said to him, are you okay? Because he noticed something was amiss. Why? Because he lived in a state of calmness. He lived in a state of serenity. Why? Because he believed. Because he was so strongly embedded, connected to his belief in Hashgacha Pratit, and that every moment has a mission. And therefore, I'm in jail, I'm not in jail. Obviously, we look for good things. Obviously, we pursue blessing. And obviously, he was pursuing freedom too. But until that happened, he knew that where he is where he's meant to be, and he's perfectly calm with it. Now, like I always say, we tell stories in the extreme. I'm not saying we can all reach this, but we always set the bar high so we know what to aspire to. I'll just share with you another very interesting insight, a Kabbalistic insight, that has to do with this as well. It has to do with joy and inner calmness and so on and so forth. The Zohar has a very interesting phrase. It has to do with one of the parshas, the weekly parshas that we just had. The Zohar is a very strange phrase. The Zohar talks about three stories and connects them all. And on the surface, they don't seem to have any connection. The Zohar says that we know that in the Garden of Eden, Chava, Eve, she ate the forbidden fruit, right? They were created, Adam and Eve, they were put in the Garden of Eden, they were told not to eat the forbidden fruit, and she ate the forbidden fruit. That was one sin, right? That was a problem. Consequences of that weren't good. They were driven away from Garden of Eden and so on. Then he fast forwards to after the flood. After the flood, Noah was in the Teva, was in the ark. And Noah comes out and he plants a vineyard, the Torah tells us, and he gets drunk. And that wasn't very good either. That didn't have such good consequences either. And then later on we read about Sarah, our matriarch Sarah. That at the end of her life it says that Sarah lived a good life. She lived for 127 years and they were all good years, right? And the Zohar says it's all connected. And the question is, what's the connection between these three people? How does it all get? So the Kabbalist commentators explain the following. So what happened was like this. Eve sinned with the forbidden fruit, right? Noah tried to fix what she did, but did it wrong. And Sarah did it right. So let's break it down. I'm telling you something. I'm just making it very brief, but because I just want to make a point. So Eve sinned, say the commentators, the Kabbalists. Why did she eat the fruit? Because she wanted to express herself. She had a desire. The fruit looked good. And she didn't want to suppress herself. She wanted to express the concept of self. So she ate the fruit. But that was wrong. Why was it wrong? Because you don't get joy by expressing self in that way, as we've talked about many times. You don't get joy by expressing self in the context of pursuing pleasure. Nothing wrong in having pleasure, but if it's a life pursuit of pleasure, that's not the way we express self. The way we express self is by meaning, right? By true meaning. But she wanted to express self. She expressed self in the wrong way, and it didn't work out well. Then came the story of Noah. Noah knew about Eve, apparently, according to the Kabbalists, and he wanted to fix that. So what did he do? He got drunk. Why? Because he said, well, if expression of self was bad, so maybe we should lose the self. So he wasn't just a drunkard. He actually decided he wanted to lose himself. Maybe he'll go to a different state of being. But that's not good either. That's not the way you're supposed to lose self. We're not supposed to lose self by disappearing or dissolving. Until we came to Sarah. Now, and this is why I'm bringing this in, because it's connected to what we're talking about. What was Sarah? Sarah was the ultimate expression of self in a constructive, effective way. Because the Torah tells us that Sarah lived 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. And then in the verse, it adds in and says, these are the years of Sarah. Right? So Rashi brings the famous Talmud expression. Why does the Torah have to repeat the phrase, these are the years of Sarah? Because although she lived 127 years, but we say they were all equal. How are they all equal? Kulan shavin letova. They were all equally good and equally happy. So the commentaries ask, they weren't. It's not true. She had good times and really bad times. She had challenging times. Sarah went through a lot of challenges. She was infertile for many years. Then she had a whole problem with her son and Ishmael, who was having a bad influence in him. Lots of things. And Hagar, there were lots of stories in Sarah's life that were very, very challenging. So how's it possible to say that all her years were equally good? And the answer is what we've been talking about. The answer is that she was like Joseph. They were equally good because whatever she experienced, she was fully there and gave it equal meaning. If it was good, she gave it meaning. If it was not so good, she also gave it meaning. Again, it's not a contradiction to what we say that we're going through a challenge. Obviously, we don't look for challenges. We pray to God not to test us. And when we go through a challenge, we pray that it should be over. But while it's there, true happiness comes not from pleasure, not from outside in, as we've talked about many times, but comes from inside out. It comes from giving it meaning and purpose. So Sarah's life, she was always present. She was always there. Whatever experience she had, she was fully there and gave it the fullest meaning possible because that was the moment of the time. And if it's the moment of the time, that's where you have to be present, and that's the concept of real spiritual, Kabbalistic calmness, in other words, right? But of course, that takes a little bit of effort. It takes the ability to be calm and not to rush. And of course, it needs a bit of strategy. So I mean, there are lots of different practical strategies that people have to induce calmness, which is something we need. Because if we go back to the very beginning and we want to develop the ability of being able to wait, to process, not being impulsive, not reacting, being fully present, we do need to be in a state of calmness and not stressed. And therefore, we also need to think about the general practical strategies that bring about, which of course include things like breathing. Right, we know that breathing deeply, particularly abdominally, is induces calmness and relieves stress. There's a lot of studies in it today. I mean, that's also spiritually true too, because we know that breathing comes directly from the soul. We've talked about this before. Neshima, breath in Hebrew, comes the word neshama, and that's why when we breathe and we let go, we kind of have that feeling of letting go. But we also sort of connect our inner self and our inner soul. physical exercise, you know, relieve stress. It's also important part of the Jewish experience. Also, it's a mitzvah in the Torah to take care of ourselves. Stopping thinking, mindfulness exercises, meditation, these kind of things. And very interestingly, friendship and connection. That's why. Because of what we said before. Stress, lack of calmness, lack of presence locks us in ourselves. When we're kind, when we have connection, when we go out of ourselves, when I'm talking about connection, I don't really mean a friend to drink coffee with. I'm talking about real connection. Real connection means when we go beyond ourselves to... I've been forgetting to do this. Okay. Doesn't matter. What did I miss here? Oh, okay. There we are. Yeah, okay, we've done that. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. So much for being present. So like I think it's when we giving chesed, kindness to others, actually brings us a sense of calmness. Number one, it's meaning always brings happiness, but also the ability to go beyond ourselves, to notice others, makes us more present, makes us more there, makes us more mindful, and that of course is connected to the concept of calmness. Another interesting thing they talk about in the research is positive speech. And they talk about, it's a very interesting thing because we know the power of speech, right? The power of speech is, speech matters. Speech really has an effect. So, you know, we talk about like, you know, you have a little, your toes hurting and you say, that's killing me. Yeah. So we need to get used to not doing that. Because you talk about something killing you, it actually will kill you, if you know what I'm saying. Not literally, I mean. Because speech matters. No, it's an amazing thing. We know that from the Torah. I mean, that's modern research tells you that, but actually it's really in line with Jewish thinking, Kabbalistic thinking. The speech is creative. God created the world with speech. We create through speech too. Whenever we say something, it creates energy. That's why positive speech is so important, right? What we say matters. What we say creates an energy. I'm not just talking about empty affirmations. I'm talking about really like, we don't have to say something's killing me, or we could say it's uncomfortable. I have a pain in my knee. It's fine. It doesn't have to, you know, and things like that. Or some things that I just can't do this. As opposed to, I'm finding this a little bit challenging. It's different. When you say I can't do this, then that becomes a reality, right? So positive speech is certainly, you know, or something like I can't stand this, or this really, you know, kind of, all those kind of things. So that's something important to bear in mind. And then again, coming back to faith, there's two things. There's faith and there's what we call bitachon. So it comes together with faith, obviously. So faith is about now, where I am now, as I'm meant to be, like Joseph was. And also, you know, I know that that's what I'm supposed to do, and I can give this moment meaning and purpose and so on. But there's also bitachon for the future, but it's having positive thinking that it's going to be okay, it's going to turn out okay. Like eliminating worry brings stress, and as we've talked about many, many times. Right. Another thing to do, now I just want to end off with one concept that we've talked about before, but a very important thing. Part of inducing calmness is to act calm. Now, people often have a problem with this because, you know, people are very, very afraid of hypocrisy. And so we should be. But it depends when, right? It is not hypocritical to act calm when you're actually not. And the reason for that is because, as we know, there's a fundamental Jewish principle that we've gone through this a number of times. I'll just say briefly that we are layered in three ways, right? Our cognition, the way we think, emotion, and the way we act. The most difficult one to change is emotion. How we change it is from either side. We change it through changing our mindset, because, you know, things like the faith, and we're here for a reason, and we need to be more present, and if it doesn't happen, it's meant to be, and there's a purpose, all that kind of stuff. But we also change our feelings through action. Very, very important principle. That Acharei HaMasim Mishach HaLevavot, the famous Sefer HaChinuch says that a person is influenced by his actions. If you walk into a wedding, you're not particularly in a happy mood, and there's dancing. If you join the dance floor, you will become, your mood will change. Fact, right? There's now these studies. I once did a whole thing with you, if I don't know if you remember, from Amy Cuddy, like a really fascinating study about body movements and about how that can affect different things, right? So that's been in the Jewish literature for hundreds of years. But sometimes if we're not calm, just stopping, acting calm brings calmness. So that's another strategy. Just to end off with the final quote in the book, He says, Amari said, I didn't put the English there, that if someone travels, I was thinking about, actually, this is a good metaphor for the Sydney roads at the moment, that if someone travels bimirut, very, very hastily, in a hurry, he's definitely not guaranteed that he won't stumble. I thought it was very funny, because just the other day, I don't know if you noticed, but coming down to Bina, if you go in the street, there's a huge pothole.
Yeah.
And I was in a rush the other day, and I didn't see it. And I can't tell you that's my car. But anyway, so that's a physical, but it's true. Yeah. If you come and you look where you're going, you won't get lost and you won't. But he says, but the person who waits will get to his destination properly. A person who's in a rush will get lost. So that's how he ends off the chapter, and that's the sums up the concept of calmness that we've been talking about. Just to remind everyone again, next week is the last one. Then we'll start again in February, but there are two shiurim and Hanukkah, one the Monday morning, one the Wednesday night. We'll send out the details, and have a great week.
Thank you.